This is the Feminine Podcast, the official podcast of Feminine, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Jenny Beck-Esme, editor-in-chief of Feminine. Last month, hundreds of fantastic Feminines got together for the Feminine Idea Exchange 18, or FIX 18. We laughed, we cried, we learned, we networked, and I, for one, at least, certainly laughed inspired. So thank you to everyone who came and made it such a fantastic event. And if you missed it this year, we are super sorry that you missed it, and we're sorry that we missed you. But today we're going to be launching our FIX 18 podcast and blog content, so you're going to be able to get caught up on absolutely everything we missed. Before I introduce you to our first piece, I am going to give you one announcement, and that is that Revive is coming up. Revive is going to be the first ever Feminine retreat. It's going to be in Paradise Valley, and it's going to revitalize your sense of self, your passions, and your career. We only have 5 tickets remaining, so I urge you now, go check out the Revive portion of the Feminine website and get your ticket now while there still are a few. The very first talk that we are bringing you from FIX 18 was the very first talk of FIX 18, and that was Building Your Raft of Bitches by Dara Cass. Now, Dara obviously doesn't need tons of introduction for most listeners of the Feminine podcast because she is the founder of Feminine and the main voice of Feminine. But I do want to give you a little bit of an introduction just in case you're new to us and also to give her what she's due. Dara is an emergency physician and an advocate for the advancement of women in medicine. She's passionate about creating a community where women in emergency medicine can act as champions for one another. She's a graduate of SUNY Downstate Medical School and Kings County Hospital Residency Program. She previously was the director of undergraduate medical education at NYU and now serves as an assistant professor of emergency medicine at Columbia University, where she's also the director of equity and inclusion in the emergency department. She is our leader and our champion. She started FIX 18 off great, and she's going to start the FIX 18 podcast and blog content out great. So with no further ado, I give you Building Your Raft of Bitches by Dara Cass.
So last year we came together for the first time. We laughed and we cried. You cried a lot. And that's why there's tissues in your gift bag this year. They're in the front of the bag. We're not messing around. You know, the connections we made over the year really carried us through for the whole year until today again. And every time something crazy happened for women in medicine, we were there for each other. So let's talk about Gary. Now, something crazy happened when a guy named Gary decided to answer an email. Now, for those of you who have been without Wi-Fi or living under a rock, or maybe you're from South Africa or Australia, because there are people here from those places, Gary is a doctor who answered an email. He basically gave his opinion about why women physicians should earn less than men. Now, Gary's opinion wasn't rooted in data or science, and this is what Gary said. Yes, there is a pay gap. Female physicians do not work as hard and do not see as many patients as male physicians. This is because they choose to, or they simply don't want to be rushed, or they don't want to work the long hours. Most of the time, their priority, it's something else. It's family, social, whatever. Nothing needs to be done about that unless female physicians actually want to work harder and put in the hours. If not, they should be paid less. That is fair. Now, needless to say, yes, I love it. It's like love it or leave it. Okay, so needless to say, Gary's remarks did not go over well with women in medicine, and they went viral. They were hundreds and hundreds of women and our male allies shared these comments over social media. And like, So very quickly, Gary apologized. But like any other runaway train, there were no brakes and there was no turning back. So we decided to take control. We answered requests for interviews and we amplified each other's voices. And very quickly, the conversation changed from one man's ignorant views to the actual conversation, which is the gendered salary gap in medicine. That's the power of this network. So I'm going to tell you a story told by a gentleman named Sean Anker. He's a researcher. We like researchers in happiness. So Sean was flying home from a conference aptly called the Conference for Women, where he had just spoken. And he thought it was a remarkable conference, right? He's sitting on the plane, and the guy next to him is looking at the program, and he's like, you know, what is that? And he's like, it was a remarkable conference for women. And the guy says, well, I'm all for equality, but what good can a conference do, right? To which point Sean said, I actually don't know what good a conference can do formally. There's no data. Can we study it? So that's what he set out to do. Sean partnered with another researcher and the Conference for Women to study the effect of women's conferences, specifically this one, on, not this one, that one, on the careers of the women who attended. And to quote Sean, the results were astounding. So what did they do? Well, they looked at 2,600 women who had attended, who had participated in one of these women's conferences. And as a corollary, they looked at the women who had signed up but not yet attended, hoping to neutralize the qualities of the women who would attend one of these conferences. And they looked at two different kinds of outcomes, financial and intellectual, trying to understand the impact on these women's careers. So first, the financial outcomes. So they wanted to find out, did attending the conference result in a significant pay increase for these women? And they defined that as a 10% salary increase. Well, they found that yes, there was a threefold increase in the women who had attended the conference. Pretty good. Then they wanted to know about promotion. Did attending the conference affect your promotion? Well, 18% of the women who had not attended a conference yet were promoted in the study period, which is pretty good. These were clearly aspiring women. However, 42% of the women who had attended a conference were promoted in that same time period. And then they looked at intellectual outcomes, right? So they found that 78% of the women who had attended a conference felt more optimistic about their future, and 71% felt more connected to others. Well, does that matter? Does being connected to other people have an impact on your career or your life? Well, it turns out it does. So a study published in the Journals of Psychological Sciences actually proved this point. They looked at a meta-analysis of 70 different individual studies with 3.5 million patients studied over 7 years. They found that social isolation, loneliness, and living alone was actually a predictor for increased mortality. Okay? Literally meaning that being socially connected not only influences your psychological and emotional well-being, but can actually be protective against your death. So what we know from Sean's studies and others, if you attend this particular conference for women, that particular conference, you're twice as likely to get promoted, you're 3 times as likely to get a significant raise, you have a 70% increase in your sense of connectedness and optimism, and you are probably less likely to die. So why, right? Why does that happen? Well, according to Lori Dalton White, who is the founder of the Conference for Women, she explains it like this. Something special happens when you see that you're not alone. Making connections and building relationships with other attendees and speakers helps women form an understanding of their worth, and they learn strategies to ask for promotions, seek fair pay, and even become a mentor to others, right? So it's the connections that matter, and it's the relationships that we build here that affect our lives. And it's those relationships that give us strength when we are at our absolute wit's end. So this is an origin story of one of my superheroes, Esther Chu. So, totally. So Esther was being mansplained on Twitter by a guy named Nicholas. Now, if you don't want to be a Gary with an opinion that really isn't valid, you don't want to be Nicholas mansplaining Esther Chu on Twitter. Okay? So Nicholas says something, whatever, and this is what Esther did because she had literally had enough. She threw up an otter. At which point, Nicholas says, huh? Is that an otter? I don't know what that means, right? Okay, so it is an otter, and I'm gonna let Esther explain what she did. So she says, ladies, here's what I've been doing in response to this shit. Oh, I did curse. Somebody asked me if I was gonna curse. I did. Okay. Response to harassment with a picture of an otter. Use the otter time hashtag to signal a bully to others. Block and report. Why an otter? Well, because they're freaking awesome and they're fierce as hell. She says, I'm not having it this year, and I hope you won't either. Respectful conversation, yes. Difference of opinion that deepens an understanding, sign me up. Trolling and insults, otter, goodbye. So that's when Esther Chu, all of our superhero, right? Introduced us to the power of the otter, but even she did not know how awesome otters were. So this is a baby sea otter. Baby sea otters are called pups. When they're first born, they actually can't swim. They spend their entire first year laying on their mother's bellies, nursing and resting. It is a very sweet life. As they grow, pups develop thick fur, thicker than any other mammal. That fur keeps them warm in the waters of Alaska, Siberia, or the Pacific Northwest. They forage for food in the bottom of the ocean, looking for marine invertebrates like sea urchins and mussels, and they actually open clamshells with tools, making them the only mammal, with clamshells with rocks, making them the only mammal to use tools. But it's their social system that has a lot to teach us. So sea otters spend most of their time in single-sex environments with male otters dropping by to mate with multiple females, often causing bodily harm in the process. In fact, if you wanna see it, I won't show it here, but you can look at it on YouTube. Despite these injuries, actually, females live 25% longer than males. And like their male counterparts, females actually rest in the water holding each other's paws in these large groups so that nobody actually drifts away. And these groups of sea otters are called rafts. Now, a female sea otter, in case you didn't know, is called a bitch. So when you see this, it is literally a raft of bitches keeping each other afloat. You that that's what this is. This is a raft of bitches keeping each other afloat. I love sea otters now so much that I wrote a children's book about sea otters, which is not called Olivia Otter the Bitch Built a Raft. It's just Olivia Otter Built a Raft. So, and in case you didn't notice, they're in your gift bags. So here's the point. When you see a group of sea otters holding each other to stay afloat, that raft of bitches is what's important to them, and it's important to us. Remember that a raft of bitches can be from 2 to 2,000, and there is always room for another otter at the edge of the raft. Okay? Which brings us back to today. All of us, by virtue of being here, have the power of a raft. And it's that power, our power, that keeps us afloat when the waters get very, very rough. And to illustrate that, I am gonna tell you about a very small raft. That's Sammy. And that's Quinn. They are both really cute, right? Totally. They're both third kids, and they both have emergency medicine doctor moms, right? They also both had liver transplants when they were very young. So Sammy was born in 2012, and he had a transplant when he was 2 years old. Quinn was born in 2016, and she was transplanted less than a year later. Quinn's mom is in the audience, Dr. Jen Martin. She was a resident with me, woohoo, at Kings County Hospital. And in case you can't tell, I am Sammy's mom. So Quinn's story was really typical for a baby with biliary atresia, although no workup in the moment is ever a straight line. By the time Jen reached out to other physician moms to dissuade her worst fears about her yellow baby, I was literally able to raise my hand and say, don't worry, bitches, I got this. I was able to walk Jen through the process of having a baby with neonatal liver disease, and ultimately the process of finding a living organ donor. Fast forward a couple of years. So Sammy has screening blood work, and his liver function tests were elevated. It was the first time in years after a normal post-operative course that he had had any problems. I had so many questions. My son was headed into his first acute liver rejection. So I Googled, and I went to PubMed, and I went to SoulCycle every single day. And I cried a lot, mostly in the dark while riding a bike. It's very good. And then it hit me, I needed to talk to Jen, because Quinn had her own rejection post-transplant, and she would be able to answer my questions in the way that I needed to hear them. So I called her, and we talked a lot. And she kept me from drowning or drifting away, because that's what bitches do. And now Sammy is fine. Months later, it turns out that rejection is not ejection, and that all he needed was a cycle of steroids and some time. I did it. At the end of the day, whether it's to respond to a viral post that undermines your professional worth, an internet troll who might actually be a Russian bot, I'm thinking about it, or to survive a day when you literally cannot breathe, you have to remember you're not alone. We need each other to stay afloat. We need each other to ride out the storms. And we need each other to turn the tide and truly fix what is wrong for women in medicine. So with that, I will say, welcome to Fix 18. And you will get ready to build your raft.